Hey everybody, and welcome to the Wealth Effect Podcast, where we discuss methods, strategies, and tactics to protect and compound your wealth. I'm your host, Matt Fabian, and I'm here to help you create your own wealth effect.
Welcome to the Wealth Effect. On Monday morning, it was announced that the FDIC had taken over First Republic Bank and sold it to JPMorgan Chase. 11 major banks had previously infused First Republic Bank with $30 billion in deposits to try to stabilize the bank after the failures of Silicon Valley Bank, Signature Bank, and Credit Suisse. This process found new urgency over the past week when First Republic revealed that uninsured deposits at the bank fell $100 billion in the first quarter. So this deal has been in the making for several days, with a few large banks bidding on First Republic's deposits and assets. With the ongoing banking turmoil creating market and economic uncertainty, how can long-term investors navigate the months ahead? The orderly sale of First Republic is good news, but its failure mirrors the other bank failures that occurred almost 2 months prior. These banks grew aggressively by pursuing deposits that proved unstable when the economy slowed, the tech sector faltered, and cryptocurrencies plummeted. While this alone would stress any bank, rising interest rates also resulted in unrealized losses in their bond portfolios, which normally don't need to be marked to market if they are expected to be held until maturity. However, falling deposits forced these banks to sell bonds and realize those losses. Posted in the show notes show FDIC bank failures by year going back to 2001. And these three FDIC-insured banks have now failed with a total of $368 billion in deposits. That is the largest amount since the Great Financial Crisis. This banking crisis results from a failure of risk management specific to these banks and the broader tightening of financial conditions, primarily due to Fed rate hikes. However, banking crises are not new, and many of the biggest market shocks since the late 19th century have been due to tremors in the financial system. The Panic of 1873, for example, occurred when one of the largest banks, Jay Cook & Company, failed due to bad debts on railroads. Others include the Bank Panic of 1907, the 1929 crash, the savings and loan crisis through the 1980s and 90s, and of course the 2008 global financial crisis. All of these historical episodes have in common the availability of money, the expansion of credit, and the eventual tightening of financial conditions. Like a sugar rush, a rapid increase in money and credit through the global financial system can drive asset bubbles and risk-taking in a particular market or across a whole country. Sooner or later, however, there is a sugar crash as new money creation peters out, sentiment shifts, and financial conditions tighten. The next chart posted in the show notes show that the banking crisis, for now, has largely been concentrated in specific regional banks. The chart shows the price performance of the Financials Index, which are larger banking institutions, the banks, as well as regional banks. And what you'll see is that the regional banks so far are down 21% going back to January of 2019 pre-COVID, while the Financials Index is still up 39% and banks as a whole are up 6%. So a lot of the losses in the banking financial sector are held in the regional banks. The previously mentioned framework of monetary creation causing a boom in the markets and causing a boom in the economy, ultimately then faltering and coming back down to earth, is sometimes called the Minsky model, named after the 20th century economist Hyman Minsky. In short, as credit continues to expand, investors, businesses, and individuals are willing to take on more and more risk. During the height of these market manias, investment returns feel easy to come by, leading to overconfidence and a fear of missing out. While this may be prudent at first, successes and gains motivate investors to take on more and more leverage until it becomes unsustainable. Think the dot-com and housing bubbles. This ends where there is a Minsky moment, whereby some events shake investor confidence, causing it all to come crashing down in short order. While the details naturally differ between episodes, this process has occurred since mid-2020 and has most recently ended with the failure of crypto companies, layoffs in large tech companies, and of course, these bank failures. Today's most important question is whether there will be broader economic instability or whether the situation is contained. After all, many surface-level parallels to 2008 are raising investor concerns, including JPMorgan Chase's acquisition of Bear Stearns in March of 2008. As the nation's largest bank, it's unsurprising that it would play a role in any financial crisis. The Fed had also raised rates before 2008, and the economy appeared to be in good shape based on growth figures. However, while the phrase, "this time is different," can be dangerous, there are many distinctions between now and the situation 15 years ago. Perhaps the most important is the amount of leverage in the financial system. The global financial crisis of 2008 wasn't just about the housing bubble. The main issue was that banks and other institutions held significant leverage in the form of derivatives, magnifying the impact of the housing market collapse. This means that even slight upticks in default rates and bad loans were enough to result in non-linear financial losses at large financial institutions and catalyze their failures. If falling bond prices are seen as a parallel to falling home prices, there would need to be layers upon layers of leverage on those bonds to truly mirror 2008, and this is not the case. Additionally, interest rates have fallen from their recent peaks, which will help shore up bond portfolios. The 5-year Treasury yield, which roughly aligns with the average bond maturity across bank portfolios, has declined from 4% at the end of 2022 to 3.6% today. Ironically, this is primarily due to the banking crisis, which was worsened by rising rates. Moreover, the Fed is now only expected to raise rates once more this cycle, possibly in its May meeting today on Wednesday, before pausing and assessing the situation. The next chart posted in the show notes show U.S. economic growth. The GDP report came out last week and showed that the economy grew by 1.1% in the first quarter. This was slower than expected, but was primarily due to a decline in inventories among businesses, which reduced growth by 2.26%. Fortunately, solid consumption spending offset this, which added 2.48%. Overall, a slowing economy is what the Fed expects to see in a tighter rate environment to try to rein down inflation. So, what is the bottom line? Long-term investors should continue to maintain perspective in light of the ongoing banking crisis. While we do not know if there is more collateral damage ahead, we do know that company-specific factors and the broader macroeconomic environment led to challenging situations for these particular banks. Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Wealth Effect Podcast. Hope you're all doing well out there, and happy wealth generation.
Investment advisory services are offered through Fabian Wealth Management, a registered investment advisor authorized to do business in states where registered or otherwise exempt from registration. Nothing discussed during the show should be viewed as investment advice. Everything discussed is generic, non-specific, non-tailored information. If you have questions pertaining to your specific situation, please reach out to us at info@fabianwm.com or call us at 925-322-2450.